The talk of Chicago is 1690 WVON, Sherwin, Chicago.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Father's Family Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Father's Family Healthy Communities. I am Saquon Lawrence, Director of Father's Family Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
My name is Dr. Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for Father's Families and Healthy Communities, and glad to be here with my brother Saquon Lawrence, co-moderating.
FFHC is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally, so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. For the next few weeks, we will present FFHC's social marketing campaign called The New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we're covering, the responsible fatherhood field and definitions of manhood. And we got two brothers that are going to discuss this this afternoon.
Yeah, we're excited about them, my brothers there.
We also are covering rites of passage and mentoring programs for black youth, and Dr. Marlana Karinga and Susan Taylor really brought those issues home for us.
They were fabulous, absolutely. Right.
We're gonna talk about effective black leadership and the role of fathers. Black womanists who are allies of FFHC, like Women in Fatherhood. We're covering effective approaches to addressing health disparities between the black community and the larger society. And we had Dr. Joe West and Dr. Angela Odom Young here last week.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And they really
they dropped some knowledge
job.
On us.
That's
they
right.
Did.
That's right. Also, we're talking about examples of strong black families, father's role in educating the black child in the 21st century, effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally. And again, we have two brothers, our friends, who are going to talk about what's going on. These are two organizations. They're not here in Chicago, but they're doing incredible work. Also, we're going to be covering checking and challenging, rather, the media's image of black men and fathers. And so tune in to next week's show, Father's Day show, where we have Leslie Gordon, PR executive and author of a new book on fathers, and Phil Thomas, president and CEO of ETA Theater, who really did a great job in terms of helping us reimagine the role of black men and fathers.
And that's, of course, so critical to redefining what's happening in the black community.
Right. Also, we want to cover managing legal and personal responsibilities related to financial support of children. And lastly, effective workforce development and sector-driven job training activity in Chicago. We checked that off with Karen Dorrington Reeves. She and I did a show a few weeks ago on sector-driven, market-driven workforce development and job training. So as you can tell, FFHC's New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. Let's talk about fathers as indispensable assets to our families and community. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our community and society. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in society in the world. But what this means is that FFHC is challenging ourselves and community to dispense with debilitating talk, which overemphasizes how bad our communities are, how bad our fathers and politicians are, our leaders, how bad our schools and families are, and instead promote solutions and examples of excellence and what it means to be African American and human in the world. So fathers out there, or people, if you want to know more about us, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Again, 312-250-0460, extension 120. Or visit our website at www.ffhc.org, www.ffhc.org, or listen to the show on WVON on Sundays at 2 p.m. Last week, we had on the forum, as I just mentioned, Drs. Joe West and Angela Odom Young, and Kirk, what did you think about
that? Well, I think, you know, I got to say that those two young academics are really offering up some really important information to us last week about the health and the well-being of communities and how we needed to address that, and how there are so many structural and behavioral things that need to change within our community with respect to improving the health of our community. So we were just elated. And by the way, we got some really good feedback from folks about that show and what it offered to them in terms of information. So we just want to be profusely thankful to them for being with us last Sunday and dropping the knowledge like they did.
Right. And our members, who are our fathers, got a lot out of that discussion. And so for our listening audience, the non-custodial fathers in FFHC are not clients. They're not participants or customers. They are members. And members can avail themselves of five activities, just very quickly: legal services to assist with visitation, paternity, and custody issues, as well as expungement of certain categories of criminal records. Two, child support services. FFHC has a strong and cooperative relationship with the Illinois Department of Child Support Services. Three, demand-side training and job placement services. Four, fathers-only peer-to-peer sessions, and we meet every Monday night with fathers on the fathers-only sessions. And lastly, subsidized father-child outings. And before we do anything else, I want to thank our funders, the Chicago Community Trust, the Open Society Foundation, and the Woods Fund of Chicago. And I want to give a quick shout-out to our partners, the Felix Family Services. And most of these agencies I'm listing here do job training and placement for our members. Safer Foundation, North Lawndale Employment Network, Center for New Horizons, Chicago Urban League, Metropolitan Family Services, the Jane Addams Resource Corporation, also the Chicago Job Council is our partner, the City Colleges of Chicago, Chicago Housing Authority, Cabrini Green Legal Aid, and the Chicago, the Illinois Department of Child Support Services, and the Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law.
And people need to know that these partnerships that we've established are really fundamental to our model about how you change and make change, that if you bring the best assets that exist already in the community together, you can have amazing things happen. And that's what we're trying to establish.
That's right. I also want to push the work of another of our partners' work. We all know that dads are powerful partners in girls' health and in their lives. My colleague and friend, Dr. Janice Johnson Diaz, and Black Thought from the Grammy Award-winning band The Roots are taking this charge seriously. They've launched a Daddy's Little Girl Health Challenge. They're asking teams of dads and daughters to spend time together getting healthy. Dads and the grassroots is asking you to do one health activity a week, dads, with your daughters, for at least 1 hour with your daughter. It will help you, and it will make a difference in your daughter's life. So go online and take the health pledge and win. The more you do with your daughter is the more you can win. The ultimate winner will get a trip to Disney. The contest starts on Father's Day, June 16th. Find out more on their website, grass-rootsfoundation.org, or look for them on Facebook, facebook.com/DLG Health Challenge.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that people understand that the work that we're doing here and the work that we do with Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities is just not focused on men, right? It's not just focused on men and boys. It really is about how women and girls play into this whole context for building strong families. And as a father with three daughters, I obviously am not excluding the reality of that within the context of family strengthening. I think people should be aware of that, and we do think that women and girls play an important role in the work that we're doing.
That's right. That's right. So today we are pleased to welcome two allies in the struggle for economic and social justice and friends of Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities and the Campaign for Black Male Achievement, Joe Jones and Kenny Braswell.
Brothers, are you on the line today with us?
Yeah, we're on. At least Joe's on.
Okay, great.
Kenny is here as well.
Well, we just want to thank you for being with us this on Sunday. We know this is a family time, so we often have to be careful that we don't use too much of it. But we thank you for being with us, and you're being so gracious to be here this afternoon.
And much appreciated, and great work. I've been listening in for a few minutes, man, just hearing you go over the tremendous goodwill you're building in that community and uplifting, fathers in particular and their families to get engaged in the work that you all are doing in this new opportunity. So, congratulations to you all.
Thank you.
Well, we've been talking about you all. We've been looking forward to this show, and we've been talking about you all every week in terms of introducing and getting people excited about you being on the show.
Absolutely.
So let's get right to it. We're going to talk, let's tell folks, Kirk, about these two brothers. First, Kenny Braswell, with more than 22 years of community development experience. Kenny is the executive director of Fathers Incorporated, a not-for-profit organization that serves as a leader in the promotion of responsible fatherhood and mentoring. Since 2004, the agency's main focus has been on the development of support and services for fathers. Additionally, Kenny serves as the director of the National Responsible Fatherhood Clearinghouse. The Clearinghouse is a widely recognized national and international resource for fathers, practitioners, researchers, and policymakers. Its components include www.fatherhood.gov. That's a site with a lot of resources. I've visited the site. Media campaigns, products, the National Fatherhood Hotline, and President Obama's Responsible Fatherhood and Mentoring Initiative.
And let me tell you a little bit something about this brother. This brother is a social media guru. I've worked with him in the past on projects, and I find him to be creative, intellectually gifted, and really making makes contributions to whatever he engages in. So I think he has something to offer us. And maybe he can talk a little bit about his social media work as it relates to the responsible fatherhood, because I think that is really, really important.
Yeah, that's right. And you may be hearing me cough a little bit. I got a cold, nothing I can't handle, but let me apologize in advance to our listeners.
Can't keep a good black man down, can you?
Not this one. Joe Jones. Joe Jones is founder of the Center for Urban Families, a Baltimore, Maryland nonprofit service organization established to empower low-income families by enhancing both the ability of women and men to contribute to their families as wage earners and of men to fulfill their roles as fathers. Prior to founding the Center for Urban Families, Joe developed and directed the Men's Service Program for the federally funded Baltimore Healthy Start Initiative and replicated the Baltimore affiliate of the nationally recognized Strive Employment Service Program. And we know about Strive because they had a local presence here. And they go in hard.
Yeah, they do.
Brothers, but it was really effective. His ability to engage and provide hands-on services to fathers garnered him the reputation of a trailblazer in the field. Mr. Jones is now a national leader in workforce development, fatherhood, and family services programming, and through his professional and civic involvement, influences policy direction nationwide. Joe has received numerous awards and honors for his leadership in programming, including the Johns Hopkins University Leadership Development Program's Distinguished Leadership Award, the Walter Sondheim Public Service Award, and the White House Champion of Change Award. He currently serves on President Obama's Task Force on Fatherhood and Healthy Families and several boards, including the Open Society Institute in Baltimore, the Baltimore Workforce Investment Board, and the National Fatherhood Leaders Group. He was a community advisor on fatherhood issues for Vice President Al Gore and contributed to the First Lady Laura Bush's Helping American Youth Initiative.
Well, let me tell you something about this brother. I've known Joe. Joe, has it been 20 years now?
Hey, Kirk, come on, man. Keep that number down. It's only been like 2 months.
So I think I'm dating myself and I'm dating you. But Joe and I go way back when the Fragile Family Initiative got started, which was a very important demonstration, national demonstration itself, that looked at issues of low-income fathers and how to address the issues of poverty and move them and connect to their families. And so Joe and I have been working together very long. And you should know that Kenny, myself, and Joe both serve as board members on the National Fatherhood Leaders Group. So we work together on a regular basis. So it's really a pleasure for them to kind of talk about the individual work that they do as professionals and as fathers and as promoters of this work.
Well, it's just good to have them on. So let's get right to it. We got a lot to talk about. So welcome, Joe and Kenny.
Unbelievable.
Thank
Unbelievable.
You.
So the first question we have, so just tell our listening audience about how you got into the this the work of responsible fatherhood? And either one can go first.
Well, maybe what we can do is start with Joe, because Joe, you know, you bring a set of opportunities to work, and maybe you could start first, and then we'll kind of talk, and then we'll move out with Kenny.
Sure. I mean, to be honest with you, man, I really stumbled in this work out of my personal journey. You know, I started, using heroin and cocaine when I was 13 and spent 17 years in and out of incarceration and addicted to those drugs. And, you know, during that period, I had a son out of wedlock that I wasn't in a position to be responsible for, basically just shirking my duty. And any time that I was sober, which was rare, it just, you know, it bothered me to no end that I wasn't being a father to that child. And fortunately, in 1986, I was able to get into a one-year residential drug treatment program. And with the support of the God and my understanding and many other people, including the drug treatment facility, I was able to turn that around. And then I haphazardly went to school, got an associate's degree in accounting. And it was after I got that associate's degree, again, in accounting, considering going to undergrad for accounting, that I realized that, you know, my personal background, particularly my criminal record, was probably not going to allow me to be successful in that particular discipline. And so by default, I ended up in human services, initially working with mentally retarded adult males. And I didn't necessarily want to do that, but when I was working with those guys whose families had kind of, you know, shirked them to the side and left them in these mental health facilities, I kind of found myself as a helping professional. And I decided to pursue that. And I landed a job at the Baltimore City Health Department in maternal and child health. And I was astounded because I was hired as a caseworker to work with substance abuse and pregnant women. And I was good at it, given that I had been in almost every publicly funded drug treatment program. So even during a time when you couldn't get drug treatment slots, I could use my relationships and get the women on my caseload into those slots. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously also into prenatal care. But what I found was that they were going back home after, we were helping them at the health department. They were going back home to these guys they were pregnant by, whether they live with them or not. And the guys had similar issues, and no one was providing resources to help these expectant dads to be the very best they could be for their expectant child. And so I was able to kind of cajole. I was almost like a radical, you know, talking to the folks at the health department, like, maternal and child health, that's all we're going to do. And these women are pregnant by these guys, and you're not going to help the guys. And eventually, around 1992, they allowed me to explore working with a subset of the men who were impregnating these women. And we started a small fatherhood program. And Kirk, as you will remember, that was during a time when, you know, sort of like the early rounds of the foundation community had just begun to invest in the work, and I kind of caught the, you know, the tail of that support, and we've been able to grow the work, but really it was my personal journey, and I learned how to be a father being a practitioner, and God gave me the opportunity after I met my wife to have a second son, and that second son is now 21. He's in the School of Engineering. He's a senior in the School of Engineering at Morgan State University. So when I think about the full circle and the opportunities, you know, and I hope brothers that may be listening, if you happen to be in a hole, you can come out of that hole. And my personal journey is, and personal experience is how I come to the work.
Mm. Yeah, and let me just say, Joe, that, very couple of really interesting things about that is that you were at the time when the understanding about social services actually serving fathers was a very low level, that the belief that these kind of services should be available to, and support should be available to non-custodial low-income fathers was really not even on the radar screen. It was just beginning. And so I think that's a powerful statement also about how far we've come and how far we still need to go with respect to getting the kinds of supports that fathers need. And then the other thing, which you're being modest about, is I have to say, from that small program in Baltimore, maternal health program in Baltimore, you've built a very large, very successful organization, and your leadership and certainly is indicative of what it means to not only work on this at the national level but the local level. So
yeah, now I get to roll with Kenny, Kirk, and Saquon. Yeah, I'm in the house now.
So Kenny, let's talk about why don't you talk a little bit about how you got into the work, brother?
you know, I'm sitting here listening, you know, to Joe, and it's basically kind of take out, you know, this word and put in that word, and we both have a very similar story. It's always interesting to me that very different roads will take you to the same destination. Mm. And so, you know, like Joe, you know, I came into this work consciously through a personal lens, and that personal lens was going through a child custody battle with my second daughter's mom, and and realizing that we weren't getting along anymore, and court had to be an intervener in getting us to a place where we could actually raise our child. You know, luckily, I was smart enough to have a child with a woman who understood the importance of communicating and figuring things out without having governmental intervention. So literally, after the first visit to the court, house, it's a family court, outside of it, after we finished, we talked outside, and she said, this is not where we should be. You know, we should be figuring this out ourselves. And we made a decision at that point, regardless of how our relationship would turn out and where we would go, that the number one priority between the two of us would be raising that child. Mm-hmm. But similarly to Joe, you know, I had a daughter before her. And the early part of her life, I had her when I was 17 years old. I was going into the military, had dropped out of school, and, you know, all of those kinds of stories that we typically have when we're young and dumb. Went into the military, got married early, got divorced early, fighting with her like oil and water, and decided to leave New York City because I couldn't take that anymore and moved upstate. And that's where my personal life began to change. But my life, with respect to me being a father, went in the wrong direction. Mm. And it wasn't until my second daughter was born, after I had began a career in radio. I was in radio for 15 years. I published two newspapers for 11 years and really was deep into communications. Got hired by the Urban League of Northeastern New York to do some communication stuff with them, and end up eventually becoming the vice president and having hands in all kinds of different places. And just like Joe, we realized that in order to fund, you know, our organization, that we had to get very innovative in doing so. And so we were doing work with the local DSS department, learned that if we could get individuals working and retain them in their work for more than 6 months, that AFDC would actually give us a stipend for doing that. Unbeknownst to me, and not knowingly, because it wasn't a fatherhood field at the time, we were employing primarily men. Mm-hmm. But weren't talking about them from the lens of men, of fathers. We were just, these were just guys that we were trying to employ, right, so that we can get a stipend to sustain our organization. And so in doing that work, moved out of that, started working for an environmental agency, and did work with the UN, and worked in South America on community building. And in that process decided, you know what, I really want to work with men, and I want to work with fathers. That seems to be the unconscious path that God set for me. Right. And fast forward all the way to now, started Fathers Incorporated as a result of that. Became the New York State Director of this Fatherhood Initiative, learned a lot about working with men and the importance of getting them employed, having done that with the Urban League, and then shifted out of that a little bit and went back more to my comfort zone, which is really the communication piece of this, the uplifting of the conversation, the moving it through media platforms and those kinds of things. So consciously, I walked into this work through a personal lens. Unconsciously, I believe, just like Joe, it was fate.
Well, both of those stories are extremely powerful. Let's talk a little bit about your organizations and maybe a little bit about the mission of those organizations, your respective organizations, and some of the innovations that you're trying to advance in the work of responsible fatherhood, and some of your thoughts in that regard.
So any particular order?
Maybe Kenny, why don't you go since you went last time?
Okay. You know, I've shifted. You know, I started Fathers Incorporated in 2004 with an eye towards providing direct service and helping men work through their custody and visitation and child support issues. And as I began doing that, found that one of the biggest issues in being able to do that was you know, it was always ironic to me working in the high levels of New York State government that the people we needed to most, that the people we needed the most to help us fund our programs, enact policy, change legislation, were men. You know, and I'm talking about the legislature. I'm talking about our Senate and House of Representatives. So it seems like we were always battling to get men to understand how important men was. And so in the last 2 years, I've decided that I think that there is enough people like Joe and you guys and others who are doing direct services at very high levels and extremely effective. But my thought was we needed somebody out here to help elevate the conversation, to help generalize it, to move it into unfamiliar fields of social work, to find out ways to create products and to get into media platforms that we don't typically get into to talk about this stuff. It really kind of took on this promoter position of responsible fatherhood. And that is what we've been trying to do. Anything and everything that we can do to elevate this conversation of responsible fatherhood through innovative social media platforms, through traditional media, through event planning, anything that elevates this conversation that supports the great work that you guys are doing and anybody else is doing is the work of Fathers Incorporated.
So essentially sounds like you're talking about penetrating thought so that people understand and appreciate the role of fathers in the lives of children. That's a powerful message. Joe, can you share a little bit about the mission and your innovations?
Yeah, after working at the health department for about 10 years, you know, I had kind of hit that ceiling where it wasn't an opportunity to continue to advance the work that I was doing there, you know, around responsible fatherhood and workforce development. So I basically cut a deal with the health department and the mayor to I created the organization, but the deal I cut was to take the program staff and funding I was responsible for at the health department into the new nonprofit that was originally called the Center for Fathers, Families, and Workforce Development. You talk about a communication snafu. It was hard as heck for people to, you know, say that name repeatedly. So we rebranded the organization to the Center for Urban Families. However, the tagline is helping fathers and families work. And our mission is to help urban families to strengthen by helping fathers and families achieve stability and economic success. And that's been the frame through which we now are working through in what we now call our second decade. And so our work is really heavily invested in drilling and penetrating into Baltimore and getting men who are on the fringes of society that happen to be dads to believe there's a space and a place for them and encourage them to come through, but then to structure a process by which is they can take the baby steps, they can move up the ladder, they can be successful as parents, they can be successful as wage earners, but we also work with women to get them into the labor force. And then we also have a pretty significant focus on policy advocacy, because our folks run up against so many structural barriers that if we only did, you know, direct services, our impact would be limited. I'm very happy that this last General Assembly session, which ended in April, we were able to get a bill through the legislature in Maryland called Couples Advancing Together. And, we know this work, you know, like the back of our hands. But for the listening audience, you know, for a poor woman who's pregnant to go to the welfare office to get benefits, she's basically got to give up her guy at a time when research says that they are together. Mm-hmm. And she has to give him up in terms of turning over him in terms of paternity and child support. But the system really doesn't engage the dad at a time when the two of them are together. And so Couples Advancing Together allows us to work with our State Department of Human Resources, which is where our TANF office and our child support office is, to change the way in which these two departments the way in which they're mandated and the way that their culture exists, so that when the young lady goes to the welfare office, the caseworker will have someone from our shop there with her that's asking about the guy. And then we want to bring them together and create a family focus plan that it helps both of them go through the trajectory of going from welfare to work, and not just saying to her, you go from welfare to work, and guy, you go from wherever you are to this debt, and we're going to come collect it come hell or high water. And so we really have really tried to advance policy. But Kirk, I heard in some of the intro work that you mentioned, this whole notion of partnerships and collaborations. I wish we could raise all the money and be expert in all the things we would need to do to help families advance, but that's not the case. And so for us, partnerships and collaboration are critical, particularly our housing partner and our vehicles partner. We now have about 100 of our folks who've gotten vehicles that help with mobility so they can advance just beyond the Baltimore labor market, which is very limited, particularly with Baltimore's limited and narrow transportation system. So those are some of the things that we've done to advance the organization, grow the organization, and then obviously, you know, the great work that Kenny has been doing, man. We now have a place where, you know, a dad who is, you know, up at 3 o'clock in the morning because he's struggling with his kid can go to a site, you know, like fathers.gov and get information when maybe the center's closed or centers around the community, the country are closed. And so I think it's the work that we are doing collectively, not just in Baltimore, but the work that you all are doing in Chicago. And you're right about Kenny and his social marketing skills, man. You know, that, I don't know when that brother sleeps.
But that's powerful story, Joe. And I think one of the things I want to raise up in that story is the notion that we're actually treating these fathers and the mothers of these children as families, which systems do not do. And I think that's an innovation, the notion that we can actually treat these this couple as a family and support them in that way. So thank you for that work.
Yeah, but both of them offered up some innovations, and this is what we want to talk about, right? This is what the New Man Project is about. It's about lifting up what works and what can we bring to this discussion that's new and innovative. So both of your organizations, Joe and Kenny, stress job readiness in one way or another, and placement for fathers. So, Joe, I'm going to ask you a question, then Kenny, I want to ask you a kind of a separate question. But, Joe, how have you been able to facilitate the entry of low-income men into the labor market with wages, benefits, and career tracks, such that they can consistently support themselves and their families? And then, Kenny, I wanted you to talk a little bit about how your organization advanced these outcomes, because you don't do direct service. But, Joe, can you talk about how it is that you've been successful in terms of getting these low-income fathers into the labor market?
Well, I think the first thing was learning from past mistakes. You know, I knew we were doing a great job of recruiting guys into the program. This goes back to the days of the health department, and almost all the guys needed a job. And we did whatever we need to do short of stealing a job to get that guy a job. And most of the guys were able to get a job, but what we found was they couldn't keep the job because they had too many challenges, whether it was past incarceration, outstanding child support. They weren't, you know, the head of household, so they didn't have a permanent residence, just a other legal issues, just a whole bunch of stuff. And we then learned, you know, stop dealing with the heart. Let's go to and create a business strategy with respect to getting these guys in labor force. So the first thing was, you know, understanding what their challenges were, getting them enough to a place where they could be stable so when they take a job, they can show up on time. And then from there, over the years, we started to advance the notion of, you know, what additional education, what additional career credentials are needed so that a person can move from entry-level employment up the wage scale to family sustaining wages. And for us, that has come in the form of creating these partnerships. We now work with both of our community college systems in Baltimore to get guys into career credentials. And we have a community partner that actually has gotten a relatively large grant to create scholarships. 70% of the scholarships have to be for African-American males. Unfortunately, our community partner doesn't have much experience with engaging that population, and we do. So they have the resources, and we have the experience. So we've partnered, and we've got several of our men into the community college systems who are now getting those career credentials. The other strategy for us is to be able to identify employers who are able to take these guys into entry-level positions, but also create career ladders within their systems. Two of our partners are the largest hospitals in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins Hospital and the University of Maryland Medical System, neither of whom prior to about 5 or 6 years ago would take a guy with a criminal record. So we've worked with them to kind of lessen their hiring practices. They now take these guys qualifies in, and then create opportunities, and they get tuition-based support to be able to move up the wage scale. And then we have other employer partners who we've gotten to pay for the apprenticeships for their employers once we get them in the door. And it's that kind of, and that's to say to the folks, you know, you call your people members, and I would say, you know, for the members, for the fathers who come into the program, that's one person we pay attention to. The other person has to be the employer partner, and we nurture those employer partners just like we do the guys who come through the program.
Kenny.
Yeah, you know, I was, you know, thinking about, you were talking about, you know, advancing, you know, the work that Joe and others do, you know, in this field with respect to fathers, and I will start with where my understanding comes from with respect to job readiness. You know, when I was with New York State, you know, we were funded to do responsible fatherhood, again, at a time that people weren't also ready to hear us put money into programs that could serve fathers. One of our biggest challenges was getting the legislature to fund us each year. You know, our program cost about $2.7 million. And my job basically was to train these five entities around New York State to really serve these fathers. And the core of those programs were job development. And as an outcome in the last year, because we had a huge comprehensive research study done by the Urban Institute that went back and looked at the 5 years, but particularly looked at the last year, our program cost $2.7 million to run across New York State. In the last year of the program, we collected $3.2 million in child support payments. Now, the interesting thing about that is 85% of those individuals who came into the program were unemployed. 86% of them had incarcerated backgrounds. Hmm. They all had, on average, $14,000 in child support arrears.
Wow.
And only 35% of them had high school diplomas. So we're talking about, you're talking about the TANF barrel. We're talking about the bottom of the TANF barrel. And so the press for us was always to say, even when we weren't promoting a program that was about child support, that was specifically about jobs, we still hit the mark on what many people wanted us to hit in the first place, and that was to increase child support payments without saying that's what we were doing. Hmm. But what that did for us is it made our point, which is if you get men working, they will take care of their children.
That's right.
Financially.
Right,
and
right.
So I learned that through that process. So the advancement of that comes from me understanding that position, but also, you know, knowing and listening to what Joe has talked about, because when I was running my programs, there were very few programs out there working specifically with fathers, and Joe's program was one of them, and his program was one that I often watched for best practices and the mechanisms to which he was doing his work, and a lot of that work I shared with those five agencies on how to do this. So for the advancement of it, you know, I always tell people, listen, the harder Joe works and the more successful he is in doing what he does, the harder I have to work in continuing to promote it.
Right.
Because people need to know what Joe is doing across the country. There needs to be 49 other Joes in each state and hundreds others in each city. But if no one is out there to promote it, no one never really knows the great work that Joe is doing, both nationally but specifically in the city of Baltimore.
Yeah. I want to take you guys down another road really quickly as the time winds up. And that is, we know that there's been research around the role and significance of fathers in the lives and the importance of them in the lives of their children. And you know, also early on, we had research that's coming out of the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Vivian Gadsden, the National Center on Fathers and Families, put out these 7 core learnings, which was essentially kind of a baseline for research around the importance of fathers and how that all worked out. But yet, we still see in the academy some angst, some question about what is the nature of impact of fathers on the lives of children. Is that there's still some question as to whether low-income, non-custodial, African-American fathers really have an impact on the lives of their children. What's your response to that doubt? with respect to those men and the fathers? And I'd like to hear from both of you on that point.
Well, you know, I think it's kind of practical that people have sort of like a narrow view of the importance of responsible fatherhood, because so much of our investment in children has been from a maternal and child health lens. We've had very little investment in fatherhood relative to the kind of investment that's been made into women's and children's issues, and we should have been investing in those issues. But we should have been broadening that frame so that we were learning about dads at the same time as we were learning about mothers and children. And unfortunately, the fatherhood field is far beyond most any other field. It wasn't born out of academia. It was born out of the grassroots community. And we are now just beginning to plant those seeds where practitioners, researchers, and evaluators are actually partnering and learning together. So I think over time, we will see an advancement in us being able to make the case as researchers and evaluators continue to get interested in this. And we have folks like Kenny and the work that he's doing uplifting the positive advantages of children. But I would say to folks that, you know, fundamentally, we have invested significantly in juvenile justice systems, the adult criminal justice system, the social welfare safety net that comes through the child welfare system, teen pregnancy prevention, but we have never looked at responsible fatherhood as a legitimate investment to uplift the outcomes for children, for little boys and for little girls. Mm-hmm. And I think we're just now beginning to see that. And I think from a logical standpoint, you can't tell me, and I don't think that most logical people would say, a child will be better off if a father is not in the home or not present in that child's life, whether their father's a non-resident father or a resident father. And I think that, you know, what we are doing on this show is an example. We didn't have a vehicle like this going back to the early days, Kirk. And can you remember? Right. If we were invited to a radio show, man, we'd be falling on, we'd be tripping over each other, man. You know what I mean?
That's right. So, Kid, thank you.
Yeah, you know, my response is a more Monday morning water cooler response. And that is, this is one of those, or when I see research like that, this becomes one of those instances where I believe emotion skews common sense.
Right.
Mm. And to a lesser extent, even ignorance plays a role in skewing common sense. Mm. How could you possibly be someone who promotes family, but at the same time do not recognize the critical significance of a father in the lives of a child and or a family community? And we can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes, because of our academic lens or our political lens, we forget that there is also a personal lens. So if you're somebody who grew up in a two-family home, two-car garage, nice neighborhood, the ability to go to college and not have a whole bunch of student loans to have to pay after you come out, and you can recognize the importance of your father and the men in your own life, but you can't recognize the importance of fathers in others' lives, particularly kids of color. Right. There is something inherently wrong with that.
Right.
And I think that for the most part, sometimes it's emotion, but to a larger extent, I think it is ignorance.
Mm. Yeah. That's why we got so much love for you all.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So we're going to switch gears just a little bit. So, Joe, I was checking out the website, and then Kirk was telling me that the president visited the Center for Urban Families. So what brought President Obama to the Center for Urban Families?
Well, man, first of all, it was an incredibly deep honor and a very humbling experience. You know, Kirk, Kenny, and I, and as well as some of our other colleagues, have, you know, spent time at the White House across administrations really helping to uplift this notion that, you know, fathers are important cog in strong families. But it's a whole different dynamic to have the leader of the free world to come to your organization. And, you know, we're in the hood. We're on Monroe Street. If anybody watched the HBO series The Wire, that's where we're located, right? And so to have him come to that with all the apparatus that comes with a presidential visit was incredibly, incredibly special. And for him to spend time, he was supposed to be with us around 20, 25 minutes. And, you know, he came in. We had a group of about 17 of our graduates. We had three of our employer partners all around the round table. And the president came in. He took his jacket off, and he sat, and he started engaging folks. And you saw the staff, you know, kind of, you know, giving him signals that was trying to leave. And he kind of looked up at him, and he just continued to talk. And his agenda was around, you know, the economic issues that face our country, where we're trying to get people on the bottom of the rung, up the, you know, the ladders of opportunity and into the labor force. And he continuously talked and asked the employer partners. Again, we had our two employer partners from Hopkins and University of Maryland, respectively, and another one of our construction partners who've invested in not just entry-level jobs, but career ladder opportunities so people can earn middle-class wages. And that was what drew him, I believe, to the center, because we stayed doggedly focused on a mission that's in aligned with his mission.
Sure.
And it wasn't that we built the center to be in line with the president, because he wasn't even in office. Mm-hmm. It's just that fundamentally we believe that strong communities have to have strong fathers, and we're again very blessed that the president this time could come to our shop as opposed to what we normally do, which is to go to the people's house in D.C.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let me, and Kenny, as we're getting close, I want to just explore just for a second the work that you're doing around the Moynihan Report and in the early conceptions of black families and the challenges that they face, and how you're trying to revisit that issue presently, and what that means in terms of the work of responsible fatherhood today. So could you kind of share with us quickly the significance of that work that you're doing?
Sure. You know, again, you know, in the effort of advancing this work and broadening our reach into the entire field of social work, the 1965 Moynihan Report did a great job in setting a foundation, at least for us to go back and look at with regards to where we got it wrong and what those trends look like and where we should really be looking to move ourselves in a position so that 50 years from now we're not having the same conversation. In fact, I don't want to be having the same conversation 5 years from now,
right,
or 1 year from now.
That's
and
right.
So, but one of the principal issues that Moynihan raised in the report was that the absence of the man in the household, in this instance, the black male in the household, will play a large role in the economic stability of communities and families. And at the time, only 23% of our particularly African-American children were born into out-of-wedlock households, and he called that a travesty in 1965. So if 23% in 1965 is a travesty, what is 73% in 73% in 2013? So for me, it's a way to begin to start looking at what our community looked like 50 years ago, particularly for me, black families, families overall, obviously, but particularly black families, and where the trends, what the trends are telling us, and how do we match those trends with the work that Joe and others are doing to figure out what is the absolute best models to reverse those trends in a very different direction. So we were funded by the Open Society Foundation along with the Urban Institute to readdress those data sets. And on June 19th in New York City, we're going to be releasing that report to kind of show you where we were and where we are. And hopefully this document and the 1965 document can serve as a catalyst to a conversation for us to begin to start looking at these data sets in a very different way.
Excellent, excellent. So what are you brothers going to be doing for Father's Day quickly?
Man, you know, my my family has told me that I need to be here, and they're not telling me why I need to be here. So, you know, around Father's Day, I'll be doing stuff in, you know, locally here in the city to uplift fathers. But I have no clue what they have planned. I just hope that it's peaceful, it's restful, and, you know, we get a chance to, you know, sit back and don't get just that proverbial tie. You know,
I feel you, brother.
Necktie, man,
that
next time thing playing out, man.
I feel you. Kenny, how about you?
I heard somebody say that the best thing you could do for me on Father's Day is leave me alone.
So is that your objective, Kenny? So is that your objective, Brother Kenny?
Yeah, no, that never happens. Like, Joe, that does not happen. But on Sunday, you know, I'll be home. I'm always home for Father's Day. That's an off-limits day for me in terms of being somewhere else. But every day, every Father's Day, our church allows the men to sing on Sunday morning in the church. And I always look forward, you know, to being able to get up and really, you know, worship and be thankful on a day that I work so hard for, to really be able to kind of serve again and show my thankfulness for what God has done for me over the previous 364 days and then the 364 days until the next Father's Day.
Well, you brothers have been absolutely fabulous, and we want to thank you for being on with us this afternoon. You've really, really lent to the quality and the outcomes of the work that we're doing nationally and that we're supporting, and so thank you.
Well, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers in Chicago and your broader listening audience, and to you, and to all, you know, the four of us on this call, man, you know,
yeah.
Happy Father's Day to us too, man, because we work really hard, and I think our children know it, and I think we need to share that with each other from time to time as well.
I feel you, brother.
Right.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Absolutely.
All right, you all. Happy Father's Day.
All right.
Happy Father's Day. Peace.
Well, we're running out of time. That was an excellent show.
Excellent.
So, again, call FFFC at 312-252-0460, extension 120, or visit our website at www.ffhc.org. And until next Sunday.
Absolutely.